Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi guys, how are you? Welcome to another episode of the Snowcast with me, Owen, and joined as always by DJ. DJ, what's the crack?
Isolation is all right. Got out in the fields this week doing a bit of farming.
What a week, man. What a fucking sun's out. Buns out, huns out.
Fucking factor 50 all week, I guarantee you. That's it. The beard has like some great pros and cons. Yeah, like it's great in one sense, the beard, in that it like I get sunburned underneath it. But the only thing is, like, in the sweltering heat, doing a bit of manual labor, fuck me, man. Just the beard is sopping and sweat in from going the whole day. Like, the other issue with the beard is it'll be topical later on, what we're talking about later on, but I'm rocking a bit of a James Harden style beard, the shooting guard for the Houston Rockets in the NBA, and it traps all the fucking dust and muck that you pick up, so you'd be like just picking bits of muck out of your beard in, and never valued a shower as much as I have the last few days with this beard.
Oh man, I've had I think yesterday I had 4 showers, like it's just insane, like, just every bit of, like, work or whatever you do, like, it's just like, oh, as soon as you have a break or you want to go to a shop or anything like that, it's just like, oh, I have to have another shower again, like, I think it clogged up the shower, it's like, so many showers.
Well, apparently here in the southeast we're not too bad this weekend, because whatever way the weather pressure system is coming, the southeast is the coolest part of the country for once. And yeah, it's like 26, 27 degree highs in the northwest, apparently, Donegal and Sligo and that.
Yeah, like, we're like 25.5 or something here.
I'm sweating just even fucking thinking about that type of weather, you know what I mean? But it's been brilliant, like, absolutely brilliant. But I can tell you from the week on the farm, we could fucking do it a few drops of rain, the ground is very hard. It's a good job that's one of the advantages of the lockdown is, if you're playing a bit of contact sport, the ground would be fucking ruining your ankles at the moment and your knees be so hard. I wouldn't be too keen on doing long training sessions in a pair of football boots. Feet would be worn off you and your ankles would be in shit. But no, man, it's been a fucking good week. Really good. And even for someone who's been like cocooning the whole time and really isolated for 2.5 months now at this stage, just to get fucking away from the house, I've gone up to do a bit of farming and just being out in the open, fucking fresh air. And
is that within your 5K? Is it?
And this is essential travel, you see, Owen. This is for
work. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And we're part of the food supply chain, so like this is fully counts as essential travel. So I'm definitely being put through my paces, it's not just for leisure exercise.
No, so, definitely not.
It's actually just outside the 5K. It's not too far away, but it's been a
good man. I'll let you off. I'll let you off the hook. I won't ring the guards today.
Yeah. Right. Sure, look, if any guards are listening, come see me.
And the third voice on the Snugcast is our returning, I don't know, this must be about as maybe 6 or 7 Snugcasts now. It's Ollie Sharp. Ollie, how's isolation treating you, man?
Isolation's going very well out here.
So you're around near Dunmore East, isn't it? You're Dunmore, like,
I'm, man. I'm just about 5K away from the beach, so we can swim in a good bit the last few weeks. It's there about, probably about the same distance down to the farm. But, we've started to get out a good bit now and go swimming every 2 or 3 days to just freshen up and, you know, get outside of the house, I suppose.
Yeah. Do you think, people's, like, kind of day-to-day habits are going to change, like, and like I just think that people are just going to just want to do, like, or maybe not even want to do, but like appreciate those things a bit more, like the fact of, like, you know, even say when it was like that 2K limit initially, like, and you wouldn't have been able to go to the beach or whatever, that, you know, now that you're like, fuck, great, we're after getting into the 5K, it's so great now that, like, I can actually, like, appreciate that, and I will go and do that. Like, it's like, even say with the, like, got, well, I'm saying the golf club's reopened, but I joined the pitch putt club up here. So, but I've just been like, oh, it's great, like, to actually just go out and, like, just hit a few balls and stuff, like, and it's something that you wouldn't even, I wouldn't have considered becoming a member of a pitch and putt club before, but, like, it's just something that's really appreciating now, like, all right.
Yeah, like, it's you're right there. Like, I mean, the golf club in Dunmore is only 9 holes. They've, like, cut off half of it because they're redoing it. Oh. But it's definitely, like, it's a good idea just to get out and get a bit of exercise and hit a few balls around for a couple of hours if you could crack that.
Yeah. Right, lads. What are we drinking tonight? DJ, go first. What are you on?
I'll kick it off there. Actually, I'm on a classic, Snugcast favourite from last summer that I managed to get a couple of cans off my uncle's wife there, Michelle. Shout out to Michelle. She sent me up a few cans of 8 Degrees, their orange ball from the Rack'em Up series last year for their 8 anniversary. Oh, it's top notch. The Fruity Pale Ale, 3.9% ABV. It was a collaboration that they did, so they did a series for their 8th birthday, 8 Degrees Brewing there just outside Mitchellstown in Cork. They did a series of 8 different collaboration brews, and Orange Ball, the number 5, is this fucking juicy, tasty, fruity pale ale. It's only 3.9% as well, so you're not gonna lose your legs over it. But they collaborated it. They did a collaboration with At Garrett Malt, who supply a lot of the malt and barley to a lot of the independent brewers around the country. And it is just fucking packed with juice. It's like, we were talking there about the weather and the hot weather and stuff like that. And when I knew I had these cans coming up this evening, out there doing a bit of manual labor in the sun today, I was like, fuck me, they're going to go down like a treat. And even just before we started the recording there, I cracked open the can and had a smell. And I feel sorry for you, because I don't know what sort of sexual noise I made when I smelled it. Like, it just smells so good and tastes so good. And it's just real proper, like, citrus punch, lovely fruity flavors, and I could fucking guzzle these all day.
They're
100%. They're like, you know, the Super Soaker last year that the Yellow Belly and Wicklow
Wolf
collaboration that we were big fans of as well. Like, obviously that was 2.3%. these are 3.9%. So, like, they have a little bit more kick to them, but just that similar sort of just drinkability, really, really sessionable. I fucking love it. And it's just one of those drinks that you don't forget. like as soon as you see anything that reminds of it, it comes straight to your mind. Like, and it evokes this lovely fucking memory of last summer, having a barbecue, drinking a can of it, or fucking like drinking the keg of it and Phil Grimes over a 2 week period between the two of us. You know, it's one of those. Like, we actually have a great memory of these last year. Owen, was we went into Phil Grimes one Friday after work, and it was on tap there, and we were going in for one. And we ended up staying for like 6 or 7 at just these because they were so nice.
Maybe finished off the keg, I think.
Yeah, that was. And then we were like, maybe we should go home, like, because we just came in for one after work. But that's the kind of drink that it is. Like, you lose yourself in it, which is fucking beautiful. And again, like, we're getting a bit teary. Wayne from the Irish Beer Blog actually tweeted us last night. Shout out to Wayne just to say, like, how much he was enjoying the recent podcast, which is lovely to hear from a fellow Irish podcaster who talks about independent craft beer. And the best thing is he said that when you were describing Phil Grimes last week, he was getting nearly emotional. Like, and yeah, this is it. Like, just drinking this can now, it's the first can and I'm about 3/4 way through it. And it's really evoking memories of the pub last summer when the weather was similar to this, and really bringing back some strong fucking good vibes from Phil Grimes last summer, which is fucking a place I'd love to be right now.
Right, well, that was a lovely memory you had there. Bringing a tear to my eye. So I'm on, it's actually a Porterhouse Brewing Company Stay Home Isolation IPA. So it doesn't have the nostalgic feeling. In fact, it kind of brings the whole coronavirus into life for me. But this is a 4.6% IPA. And again, full of juice as well. It has that kind of taste of, you know, like a sour when you're, I don't know how I'm going to explain this, but you know when you have a sour and you get that like, feeling of like, where your mouth like nearly puckers up and like, you just kind of, I don't know, you can kind of taste it all on the kind of roof of your mouth and stuff. And like just juice kind of explodes in your mouth. Your own mouth kind of salivates and stuff after taking it. And this is the same, but without that kind of sour taste. Really, 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 really nice. Lovely with, I'd say it'd be really nice with a barbecue or even like salads or something like that. Like it's really kind of fresh and nice. But actually there a second ago, I nearly got, there's a ring pull on the top of the bottle. So the top of the bottle is like, there's like a ring pull off the top. And there a second ago, I actually nearly got it rammed onto my finger. I was kind of pretending I had a wedding ring on. I was married to the bottle or something, but it actually got stuck on there. But I got it off anyway, everyone.
It won't be the first fella to be wed to the bottle. sorry.
Right. Ollie, what are you drinking tonight?
It's hard to follow the two explanations there of their cans, but I've gone for the Kinnegar High Glen Dropped Dry Hopped Citrus Sour, and same as Owen, when it hits your palate, it just explodes.
Yeah,
completely like hits me with summer vibes, like a nice fruity but like a bit of a twang, like a sour twang to it. And I have to say, I've been getting these in Arkeen stores the last like 2 or 3 weeks, and probably the nicest craft brewery can I've had ever, honestly.
Wow. I need to get on these.
They're special, like, because they're like a dry hopped sour, so you're getting like the best of everything with it, because you're getting that fucking citrusy, twangy kick from the sour. Yeah. Also, the hops give it a different dimension, and it's really, really unique. Like, I haven't had a drink. I haven't had a similar drinking experience when consuming a can of the stuff. Like, it's fucking phenomenal. And Owen, it's actually everything that you love. It's everything that you love in a can.
Yeah, it's really
sours,
lemons.
I'll put it
all about that.
I'll put it this way: it's like it's like the best of Castaway and the best of Hopped in Space packed into a can.
Would you say it's a bank holiday Monday drink?
Any day of the week.
It's any day of the week. Really. Yeah, It's really zesty, and the smell of the aroma from the like out of the glass. It's just, it's top class. It's really, really good.
Good stuff. Right. So to move on to our next, actually becoming a much loved segment is Pint Watch. So just remind listeners, this is a segment where me and DJ until now have looked at the government restrictions that have been put in place on pubs, really. It hasn't been on anything else, but we're just trying to find or to work out when we think the pubs might reopen. So just to remind everyone, the 10th of August was the date that the government had put in phase five, was it phase five? Yeah. Which was which included the reopening of pubs. So that was the date that we had all kind of geared ourselves up for, and that was the date that we saw envisaged ourselves into going into a pub. Now, we always knew that things could get better or worse, and that that date was flexible. So we were, I think at the start we were probably prepared for it to be like later. Like, I think initially we had, everyone was saying there'd be no one in a pub until December, because they just didn't really think that it was going to be as realistic. But in fairness, all of the case numbers and stuff have been dropping now, and things are looking to be on a good enough course. So I'm going to bring it to DJ. Actually, I'll recap first. So last week, DJ, we kind of had this, we kind of got the context last week in terms of our 2 meters and 1 meters and all this shit. Like, but let's just say 2 meter. We'll just kind of say the 2 meter social distancing, right? What date did you say last week?
So basically, the first week I was a bit pessimistic. 2 weeks ago, I basically said 2 weeks ago, I didn't see it being lax on pubs, and I thought if we get a bit of a bounce from some of the relaxations and we got a spike in numbers, I was like, I could see a slowing down of the phase releases, and phase five was initially August 10th and I said August 24th. Last week then, given we had a week of phase one, the figures were good, and then all of a sudden you had this WHO guidance on 1 meter, and we had seen kind of the Clareburn Live segment and stuff like that. I felt that, yeah, I said with 2 meters, the figures are more encouraging than they have been a week earlier. We were still going in the right direction. I was like, right, I can see this being August 10th, like it had been said previously. But I did then throw in a caveat that if the government followed on with the WHO guidelines on 1 meter distancing, I could see a better case being put forward for the VFI and the LVA's conditions for reopening, which we went through in a previous episode. In a lot more detail with Peter Breen of the Portlaoise Pub Club. Now, I felt that if they brought in the 1 meter, that then I felt like it would be very difficult to differentiate between a pub and a restaurant in terms of the service being offered. So then I kind of said, right, I think they'd have a good enough argument and they could lobby to get put in phase four. And I think I was saying it would be the 19th or 20th of July. In the last week, like, I don't know, and, you know, there hasn't been too much, right, in terms of Pint Watch in the last week that I've seen. Now, I have to say, like I said, I've been up on a farm for a week, so I haven't had any access to internet or anything for most of the week. So when I get home trying to catch up on things, it's mainly like catching up on WhatsApp group chats and stuff like that. And I haven't paid too much heed to it. But the numbers are improving. And someone said to me on the phone today, just kind of casually, so I haven't fact-checked this, but apparently 5 counties are COVID confirmed COVID-free at the moment. But when I say they have no actual active confirmed cases at the moment, I'm not 100% certain on that. But it was actually my mom said that to me today, because she said, "Oh, Waterford is one of the 5 counties." Yeah.
Top journalists.
Yeah. Jacinta Walsh, investigative journalists extraordinaire, and a new listener to Snowcast in the last few weeks. So I won't say too much more, man. But she said today that she heard that there was 5 counties that didn't have any active cases, and Waterford was one of them, which, you know, if true, and certainly that's the direction that things have been going recently, would be absolutely amazing and fantastic. We saw during the week we had our first day since March 20th, I think it was, where we didn't have a death from COVID.
Yeah, Monday there, yeah.
So, look, think there are positive, there are positive signs in the last week. The battle isn't over, and I think that they'll continue on the phasing. But I do think, so if you look at the way the government have handled the crisis up to now, with the unemployment payments, with all the other stuff that was brought in and restrictions, they've been kind of like a week behind the curve in terms of reacting to what people have looked for. And the last week, the 1 meter distancing was widely being put forward based on evidence and based on WHO guidelines. So it's something that we can fully support, because public health care worldwide are now advocating for 1 meter social distancing instead of two when people are at rest. So I actually do think that the government will eventually succumb to, succumb to pressure is probably the wrong way of putting it, but I think it'll eventually come around to that way of thinking, because other countries have opened up before us because they've been in better situations, and we're going to see more data coming through from those other countries. And what I think that'll do is it'll convince our government to switch to 1 meter, and I think that'll actually bump forward. So I'm saying now for definite, my guess for Point Watch is I'm going to stick July 20th down as the date that the pubs are going to open again. I think it's going to be phase four. And I think they'll stay to the phasing, but I just think like stuff like pubs and that will be brought forward to phase four if it's a 1 meter guideline. I'm predicting that it will be changed to 1 meter in the next 10 days by the government of Ireland. And I'm predicting that that will then give enough ammunition to the lobbyists in the VFI and LVA to convince the public health authorities to bring a pub forward, because like we said, it's very hard to differentiate between a pub that doesn't serve food. It's very hard then to differentiate between a pub that serves food mainly to a restaurant. So I just think there will be that argument put forward, and I think it'll be won because I think the economic arguments will win out. I've been, you know, everyone knows my views on whether they should win out or not, but I think that's what will happen. And I think looking at the evidence that we see so far, there's a lot to be optimistic about if we can keep a lid on things and things people are sensible. But then the only caveat is, no matter what you say, it doesn't solve the toilet problem. The toilet issue, the toilet situation in pubs is going to be the big issue. And I just don't see how that's circumvented. But I'm going out and saying July 20th. So I've basically brought my stuff, my guesses forward 5 weeks from 2 weeks ago, because I think that there has been a lot of positivity in the last 2 weeks in terms of figures and numbers. And if we stay on the same path, then I think July 20th, that's my Point Watch report for this week.
It's a bold move, Catton. But
let's see if it pays off,
yeah. Geez, fair play. Actually, here, write that down. July 20th.
Yeah, we're giving 3-1 on Snowcast Bookmakers.
Yeah. What do I think? So I said, I think all this, I can't really remember what I said with 1 versus 2, but I think in my head, I just kind of had August 3rd. So I think
You said August 3rd regardless.
Yeah, I think I said in terms of the phases that it was for phase, so what we're phase two Monday week, isn't it?
Yeah, phase two is the 8th of June, and phase three is the 29th of June. And yeah, phase four is, I think it's that 20th of July.
Yeah. So what I was saying last week was that I thought that phase two would go ahead as planned with kind of a three-week window as planned. And then I think I said phase three would go ahead as planned with a three-week window. And that phase four then would actually go ahead with, I said it would be accelerated to a 2 week window. So I think now I'm going to push my date up another week only. I still think it's going to be a phase five job. And again, I think it kind of boils down to that whole point of when alcohol is involved, social distancing goes out the window. And I just don't think they're going to be ready. I think that there's going to be a huge kind of education piece involved. And I think that the restaurant trade might work as a kind of a pilot job for pubs. So I think it might. I think that's how I think it might go. But I don't know. I'd love it to be with the restaurants. But I'm gonna say whatever is before what week before August 3rd. I suppose 27th is it or 26th of.
It's the 27th. Yeah, the 27th is the Monday. Yeah.
27th. Yeah. So I'm only a week after you now, but I suppose I'm kind of thinking of it from a different. Yeah. Aspect of kind of accelerating phases more so than actually bumping everything ahead. Whether that's right or wrong, like the 3 week window was there for a reason at the start. It's like, you know, you can't tell how well you're doing within a phase until 2 weeks post the start of the phase, you know. So we're only going to see starting this week how well the implementation of phase one has gone, because you're 2 weeks post the start of it, and you're able to get that kind of isolation period, or, you know, when people would have had symptoms or whatever, and presented as a case post that phase is only going to start this week. Well, obviously it would have started a bit there the previous weeks, but, you know, technically this week. So you can actually only see how well people are doing from this week on. So again, it all boils down to data. It's all down to how many cases, how we're doing. But looking at it this week, we're not doing too bad. Like, we are, like, I think Ollie, what do you think, man?
Yeah, so I'm gonna pick up where I take points from what Owen said, and that it depends how the restaurant trade is. It's a pilot from the 29th of June and down saying kind of the middle of July. Yeah. And I have good reason to assume that a lot of publicans that may also have restaurant licenses are going to open their restaurant on the 29th of June. They may or may not use the actual restaurant area that, you know, they have in the license, but may also open the bar, spread the tables out, and if they have an outdoor seating, provide table service only with pints. So I don't know, to be honest. I think that kind of goes against the, as I said off before we started recording, the kind of the good faith between publicans, and that there's no legislation saying you cannot actually open the pub or serve alcohol, but it's kind of like, you know, we don't want you to do this and we'll look unfavorably at you when you're renewing your license to your pub.
Yeah.
I think part of the problem with that, Ollie, sorry to put in there, is if for example a restaurant that could, a pub that has a restaurant hanging on to it, and then if they open a restaurant but also open a bar and strictly open it as a bar with social distancing measures included, and then say for example the guys in J&K Welch's or the guys in you know, and in Tully's, even say in Waterford, like, they're not going to be able to do that. So then all of a sudden they're being ostracized. So it's going to create a lot of tension in the Vintners Federation and the LVA.
Absolutely.
And it's just one of these things that it's like, it's this really shit situation where you're at loggerheads where, you know, it's detrimental to my business not to do this. But at the same time too, like, Do you have more bargaining power as a lobbyist group with the government if you're going together and say, right, well, we can open a restaurant, but we're going to keep the bar shut in solidarity with these people, and like, we want this to be opened in 3 weeks time or 2 weeks time or whatever the period is. But it's a great point that you make, because there are going to be businessmen out there that think, like, fuck everyone else, I'm just going to open my bar that's adjacent to my restaurant and serve people at the tables with pints, and they're not going to give a fuck.
And I think that's going to be the case with a lot of pubs, well restaurant pubs that, you know, have pub licenses but have built on a restaurant or vice versa. They're going to say that, well, look, this is the perfect time for me to make the most amount of money I probably could in a 3 or 4 week window from June 29th to whenever the official pub licenses are allowed serve again. I think it's as Owen said, it's going to be a pilot scheme nearly to see whether or not social distancing will be adhered to. But I think it kind of defeats the fucking purpose of it all if people are going to open up a bar and start serving picnic tables on a terrace, or, you know, big long benches where there could be any amount of people sitting on them, you know. With a restaurant, I suppose the only thing you can provide is the 2 meter social distancing. But once you start, as I think Darren might have said, it, you start introducing drink, social distancing does go out the window.
Yeah, it doesn't really in a restaurant, like if you you know, if you introduce it like for people going for a meal, it does, like obviously it does every now and again, but it doesn't as much, like.
Yeah,
but then on the other side, then it's unfair if restaurants are able to serve drink and bars aren't. You know, if bars aren't able to open and restaurants are able to serve drink. But then on the other side, like most restaurants aren't viable. Most, like, without serving drink, most restaurants make their money off of the bottle of wine that you serve with your dinner. Like, have you ever gone out for a meal where you haven't bought drink and then gone out for a meal when you've double, triple the bill as soon as you introduce drink into it, like, you know? So, like, you can see how, like, they want you to drink, like, you know? So, it doesn't serve them fucking, they're not, like, making any money for giving you a 12 euro burger and chips or whatever, like, in the restaurant, you know?
But the other side to that, too, is, like, say,
the other side, there's been six sides.
Yeah. In this fucking pentagon of pubs versus restaurants, is like, so like Niamh's brother-in-law runs a gastro pub in Galway, and it's a pub first, and they serve, and food is incredible, but it's a great little pub.
Give a shout out to
the Powers Attached Bar in Uchterard in Galway.
Lovely
shout out to Rory and Louise running that there. It's a fucking brilliant spot. But like, it'd be very hard to enforce social distancing, and like they've kind of consigned themselves to being the last open, and they've consigned themselves to being a pub first, that they are in with the pubs, even though they do have the restaurant license as well. And it's one of them that, like, you know, again, like they're a small family run business, like with high fucking rents to pay, license fees, insurance and stuff like that. It's an awful fucking situation to put people in, because it's their livelihoods, you know.
Yeah.
And I feel very sympathetic for them. And I just think we learn an awful lot from Italy and Spain over the next few weeks, because they were hit an awful lot fucking harder than us, and they're opening up now, and people are starting to go, like, I see, like, you know, sports journalists that I follow on Twitter who live in these places, you know, even like, say, Luis Garcia, who's favorite Liverpool, who lives in Madrid, and he put up on his Instagram story, you know, him at a cafe.
You're not still following him on Instagram, are you?
He's brilliant, man. On the Instagram, man. He's brilliant on the Instagram. He's got great Instagram game. But he put up on an Instagram story, you know, first cup of coffee in a cafe in 4 months or whatever it has been for them.
Yeah.
And like, so like, they're getting back to normality, and like, but now they've got a different drinking culture and bar scene to us. So like, their bars are a lot more like cafes, because you don't want to sit in them for 6 hours and drink 20 pints.
Yeah.
But I just think it'll be interesting. We'll see what's going on there and how it's been managed and how it's responding, you know. And I think, like, that's where I'm getting a bit of encouragement. Like, I was a lot more conservative on than you a couple of weeks ago, but I'm getting this sense of encouragement because the WHO are recommending 1 meter guidelines, and other countries are doing this before us. And if their data is favorable, then, you know, how can our government, who are all about business over fucking everything else, how can they turn around to a sector that brings in a couple of billion a year in revenue? How can they turn around to them and say, you're not opening for another month, when if it demonstrated in other countries it's safe to do so, especially when the reproductive rate of the virus is like 0.4 at the moment in Ireland. So like, this, our own CMO basically said last week, the community transmission of this virus is essentially gone now.
Yeah.
So I apart from some really, really badly managed clusters in certain working situations in nursing homes, care homes in Ireland, it's essentially gone out of the community, which is representative in the figures. So I think the pubs, along with the gastro pubs and restaurants, they have a very good argument to open sooner. I'm not saying they should fucking open next week, but I'm saying, like, and the amount of data that we'll have between now and July from other countries and from ourselves in breaking out. It just gives me a lot more confidence. It won't be the pub that we were in this time last year. It won't be the same experience, or won't be the same. There won't be the same socializing associated with it. That'll be a year or 2 years to get back to that level of comfort, I think, in these situations. But like I said a couple of weeks ago, it's a good job we have the extra long mics. But I do think there's a bit of a silver lining on the cloud at the moment, and there's a bit of light at the end of this tunnel. And I am, you know, for someone who was really doom and gloom a couple of weeks ago about all this, I am feeling a lot more positive at the moment, just based on my own, you know, views. And this is, there's zero science behind it whatsoever. It's just my interpretation of how things are going. And again, it's all contingent on the data that will emerge over the next month or so.
Right. I need a date from you.
Yeah, so I'm just going to say that over the next week, obviously, figures are going to play a huge part in when phase five is going to really, like, roll out.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah. You know, like, obviously, we all know that people probably have been meeting more than groups of three or four over the last 2 weeks, and maybe not social distancing and whatever. Like, that's their own business. But, like, that's going to play a huge part now next week. But I think August 3rd is probably going to be my realistic opening for pubs with a pub license, and not pubs with a fucking restaurant license, and, you know, all this skullduggery, basically. I think if we can keep the numbers down over the next 3 or 4 weeks and restaurants kind of go well for the first 2 or 3 weeks, they'll consider bringing it back a week. But I would be skeptical on like the 20th of July, to be honest.
Okay, yeah, good. Yeah, no, good point. That, Darren, actually, yeah, can I clarify, right? This Pint Watch, we're saying, like, we're equal employers here of all pubs to be open, like,
yeah,
a pub that you want to be in, for a pub to get a pint in that pub. We're not talking about shady alcohol in a it's everyone's allowed open, isn't it?
If someone serves a bit of grub and they get a restaurant license, they open as a restaurant to give you a sneaky pint on the side, like, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a proper pub.
Yeah, meeting for the snowcast. When is the snowcast going to be live again in a pub?
I'm talking, when can you go to an institution for the sole purpose of a few pints in a chat? Not to go and have a chicken salad because you can't get a pint without it.
Yeah.
I just like to say that there's going to be places that, like, won't be reopening in a month's time, in 2 months' time.
Minute silence is
a terrible idea on a podcast.
pause your playback there.
We probably,
and we're back. And we're back.
don't do it if you're driving.
Not going to Wetherspoons anymore than probably right now.
I know. When you think back on it, Darren, and like us, just talking about Wetherspoons coming to Ireland and stuff like that, like Jesus, there's way different things to be worried about now, isn't there? Like,
yeah, there is, but it's just, you know, this whole thing should put a lot of things in perspective for a lot of people. And, like, one thing that should be put in perspective is how lucky we are with some of the pubs that we have and some of the breweries that we have in the country. Yeah, so, like, exactly. It's just one of those things, like, fuck it. Like, it's almost like, you know, I grew up in a house that you could see the Blarney Castle from, and, like, thousands of Americans flocked to it every year, like, in amazement. I never appreciated it. And it's that let's start fucking appreciating what's on our doorstep.
Yeah. And to move on to something else that we appreciate, Michael Jordan. Oh my God.
Speaking of love and local, Michael love. Jordan.
Oh, I just wanted to refill.
Go for it. DJ, so, like, over the last few weeks, I think, so it's been, what, 2 episodes a week now for the last 5 weeks. The Last Dance documentary, which was done by ESPN and hosted on Netflix outside of the US, has just taken over our lives. Like, it's been so good. Like, it's the best sports documentary I've ever seen in my life. Like, I know people have said there's a few flaws and stuff with it, but like, just the production quality of it. Give me a few of your thoughts there, man.
I just want to put it out there, because I know that like, we have a broad listener base, and yeah, not everyone is into sports that listens to the podcast.
No.
My lovely fiance Niamh, she has absolutely no time for basketball. When the NBA is on, we've BT Sports, when the NBA is on BT Sport here and she's going to bed, I'll put on a basketball, because I fucking love it. I think I've said it on the podcast in the past, I think of all elite athletes, I think elite basketball players are the best athletes in the world. I think they're the most fine-tuned, incredible athletes. When you look at some of the acrobatic stuff that they do on a court, like, it's mind-blowing. It's the physical ability to play basketball at that level and play 82 games in like a fucking five or six month window, where, you know, it absolutely blows my mind. So I've always had this massive admiration for basketball. So I just want to put out there that Niamh has said this is one of the best documentaries she's ever watched. Not sport documentaries full stop, as someone who has no interest in basketball and had no clue about Chicago Bulls. She obviously knew who Michael Jordan was, but she had no idea what happened in his career. Like, even spoiler alert, the episode where we probably get
started. Are we doing spoilers?
I think we should do. Because this is why we should do spoilers. Spoiler alert, the episode where he quits basketball midway to start baseball. Niamh was like, this isn't real. This is a piss take. He didn't actually, I was like, Niamh, if you fucked off to play baseball for a year, this is absolutely real. Like, it happened. And was brilliantly satirized in the movie Space Jam. But I just wanted to like say, like, you know, for anyone who's not into sport and thinking, right, they're going to talk about The Last Dance and tune out now, don't, because this isn't just an amazing sports documentary. The cinematography, the use of 25-year-old, 30-year-old footage, and the way the story is told, at times it can be a bit confusing to jump in between eras, because it doesn't just do a strictly chronological, it jumps between his pre-NBA career to the end.
It's so brilliantly, man. It's not, I don't find it confusing. It's so good. Like, the way they tied up every single aspect of that 1998 season, when, like, tying it back to pieces of, like people's lives at the time, or people's careers, or backstories and stuff, like, tying in, like, fucking hell. I watched that. I haven't watched the last episode yet. So I still have that one to watch. But I watched the Steve Kerr one, episode 9, I think, with Steve Kerr. And Jesus, man, his story is amazing. Like, they've all, like...
But I mean, the thing with Steve Kerr is, like, he's gone on to be one, like, the youngest coach in NBA history to get 250 wins. Like, he's like, this amazing fucking coach as well now, you know. He wasn't just part of possibly the best basketball team ever. It's amazing. But what I love about this documentary is it's actually not a Michael Jordan documentary. It's a Chicago Bulls documentary. But just like that team, it's almost like it all centers around Michael Jordan. But like so much focus on Steve Kerr, like you said, with Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman. And even like Niamh was like, I know who Dennis Rodman is, purely because he used to ride Madonna and Carmen Electra, like, you know, and he was just...
I'm
like,
a North End Arbor, yeah.
Yeah, and he's just this absolute, like, mad figure, like, just crazy character who's... And a really fucking lovable character, even though he's so eccentric, like... But my favourite... One, the thing that I think sums up, like, how dramatic this whole documentary is, and, like, just the type of characters you're dealing with, this footage had to be signed off by Michael Jordan to make the documentary. He refused to release the footage all this time. Like, the filming concluded in 1998. He refused to release the footage this entire time until LeBron James went back to win the world championship with the Cleveland Cavaliers in 2015 or 2016. So it was basically the night of the finals that they were going to win that, Jordan signed off on it. And he's so competitive, a lot of the NBA journalists reckon that the reason he signed off on it then to go into post film and production to create the documentary that's released now, it's taken 3 years to do it, is he's so competitive that people started questioning whether LeBron James was a better basketball player than Michael Jordan. Mm. And Michael Jordan was basically like, I'm not fucking having this. Let's release this fucking documentary that shows me to be the best fucking player of all time. And whatever you think about any of it, his fucking will to win is just outrageous. Like, he,
I've never seen anything like it. That is, it's crazy, crazy stuff. Like,
every cliche in sports is written about Michael Jordan. I'm convinced of it. Like, you know, he's just, oh man, he's just, oh, got that single mindset. But I just think, like, you asked me for a few thoughts and I rambled for a few minutes, but I just think, like, it's one of those documentaries that transcends sport. Yeah. I think the Senna documentary, which is a once-off sort of movie-style documentary, did that. Yeah. I think Formula One Drive to Survive is a top-notch documentary.
But yeah,
even those two that I absolutely love,
they don't even come close.
No, they don't come close. And it's a bit, I reckon the documentary turned into something like Icarus did, where Icarus was initially a documentary about how do I dope, and it turned into this, like, completely different, amazing documentary.
Yeah.
And I just think, you know, we grew up in an era where basketball wasn't widely available in Ireland. And we grew up, we were children throughout this era, that if we had access to it, we'd have a lot more insight on it before the documentary.
Mm.
And even before social media, before worldwide news was properly available, like, we had four TV channels in the mid-90s to late 90s. We all knew who Michael Jordan was. There was no fucking doubt about it. He was he was a social media superstar 20 years before social media was there. And I just think that tells you how fucking good he was and how much, you know, how personable, how much personality and how much of an aura was around him.
Yeah. Ollie, what do you make of him, man?
Well, look, I mean, there's no denying that documentary is probably one of the best made and well stitched together kind of like piece of cinematic video I've ever seen. Like, it's just like, as you said, like, moving from like 85 to 93 and then, you know, 98 back to 95 when he comes back, and all this, like, it's so seamless that you don't even realize you've changed years.
Yeah.
He's playing basketball 1 minute and then he's back winning his, like, his fifth championship, but it doesn't even, like, you know, it doesn't bother you. Like, you're so engrossed in it, it just makes sense whenever you're watching it, you know? And, like, so I was born in 98, the year he won his last ring, and I only realistically got into basketball the last probably 2 or 3 years, and, you know, everyone always says MJ is the GOAT, and, like, I had no real reason to not believe it. But then, like, you see LeBron, like 3 rings, and Curry has a few rings. Kevin, you know, you've got these, like, modern day players that are just, you know, they own the NBA at the moment.
Yeah.
And I have to say, watching this documentary, probably, like, it doesn't really put any doubt in my mind that he actually was the GOAT, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's, it's so hard to say that he was not the best player that has ever played in the NBA.
I heard a quote from the director, which was really good, and he was saying that, like, you know, you're saying, like, that, like, Steph Curry has a few rings, LeBron has a few rings, but, like, it was the fact that Michael Jordan prevented everybody else from, so, like, Reggie Miller, like, none of those guys, like, got rings because that Chicago Bulls team just, like, smashed the 90s, like, and just he just prevented everybody else from getting a ring. So there's guys during that era who would make, like, a dream team or make, you know, Hall of Fame, who've never gotten a ring, like, just because of him, like. And I think I thought that was just a really good quote from that director. Like, that it just shows you, like, you know, you can say, like, oh, Steph Curry's fucking best point guard or whatever, and you, like, you can have all these, like, or LeBron is the best ever, but, like, it's just like LeBron has, like, left up everybody, like, to surpass him. And, like, you know, the Golden State, like, the last few years, like, when they were just absolutely trouncing everybody, like, you know, like, how can you say that LeBron was the best ever, like, when he wasn't getting anywhere near them at those years? Like, he's phenomenal. I've never
I've never seen that mentality in anybody before. It's so good. Like there's one episode where I can't remember who he's playing or whatever, but you know, he's there. It's nearly like that. Each episode is nearly formulaic because like, it's just like one guy goes to him like, oh, you know, good game, Mike, after he beats him, you know, yeah. Good game. And then he just goes, and that was it. Like, you know, that's all I needed. That was the fuel in the fire. Like every single episode is that, like, you know, but that one specifically where they go, your man goes, oh, good game, Mike. Like, you know, he goes, fuck him, right? And he's, I'm going to beat him. I'm going to smack. So I went one-on-one. It was a rookie guy. Yeah. Yeah.
It was a rookie
yeah.
with the Sacramento Kings, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That no one can remember his name because he's not Michael Jordan.
No, exactly. But then afterwards, like, it was like, I don't know, was it like 6, 7 years later, they went back to your man and they were like, you know, why did you say it to him? And he goes, I don't remember saying it. I don't think of it. And then like the camera pans to Michael Jordan. And then he goes, yeah, I probably just made that up. Just drive my own mentality to just fucking win. Like it's insane. Like he's just making to put fuel on the fire for himself. He's incredible.
We were watching a Hero one night. And next thing Neil just turned to me and said, fucking hell. Everything that happens to him makes it personal to him because he just has this routine and everything. He was like, and that made it personal for me. And then he's like, fucking
everything else. It's great. Like, just the footage as well. Like the behind the scenes stuff where the locker room stuff and like Dennis Rodman riding off on the motorbike with a can and stuff
Dennis Rodman, I have to say this, right? I was thinking we'd go around and ask everyone, right, from the documentary, who would you most love to go for a few pints with? But I don't think anyone would say anyone other than Dennis Rodman. Like, yeah. I genuinely don't think they would because I think it would just be the best night of your life.
I heard something from the director, a few quotes from him, and he's saying about that Dennis Rodman interview. So I think he said he had 4 hours with Dennis Rodman, and that he's saying like half of it was just trying to keep him on track and like stop talking about North Korea and stuff, and just like just like talk about Jordan, and like he said he can only use it. So like you notice like that Rodman episode. Like Rodman's in it for all of that, like, you know, but for every other episode, Rodman isn't really in it. Like, you know, you have Scottie Pippen like talking about events and stuff, but like Rodman doesn't talk about anything else. He's only in it for like that little sliver in episode because they just couldn't get that much info out of him at all. Like, because he's just going off on one. Like,
he's so funny. Man.
He's hilarious.
I have to say though, for someone who like won a game and then he flew to Vegas that night.
Yeah.
He missed him for like 72 hours and then like probably was very much heavily on drink and drugs while he was in Vegas.
And Carmen Electra.
Michael Jordan comes to the hotel room. Carmen Electra goes and hides behind a couch because she doesn't want to see Michael Jordan come into the room waking up her boyfriend, Dennis Rodman. Like. And then they go back to training camp and
he smashes him. Smashes him then. He just goes all out. Like,
but like the thing with Dennis Rodman, he's a fucking really intelligent guy. Like, you know, he's But like what my favorite highlight possibly of the entire documentary series was, you know, when they're talking, they're like asking Dennis Rodman, like, how are you so good at rebounding? You know, and next thing you just see, he starts off with being like, well, I knew if Michael would throw it, it would have this spin and it'd bounce this way. And next thing, it goes into this spin up, like him just going through everyone he ever played with and how it would spin and where he'd go. And it's almost like he's dancing, doing this fucking real shit. Like, I thought that was brilliant. There's just an insight into his character because even 25 years later, he had this fucking photographic recall of everybody's shot and how it would rebound. And that's after all the possible drugs, but absolutely all the sex and late nights and drinking that he was doing throughout that era. Like, he's a phenomenal character. Like, I'm absolutely fascinated by him.
Yeah, it's so funny. I was going to say, he comes across, like, like as this loony kind of character, but like extremely intelligent at the same time. Like, you know, he's well able to verbalize how he felt about events. Like when he's speaking about, you know, when he was part of the Pistons, the Bad Boy Pistons in the late 80s, like he's well able to say, like, you know, we bet the fucking shit out of that early Chicago team, and, you know, was able to recall some like very like pointed kind of like parts of that whole journey that, like, I had no idea Rodman had rings before he went to the Bulls. You know, like that was something I didn't know, and I have to say, like, it was pretty impressive to know that, you know, he kind of proved himself before he even met Michael Jordan. You know,
he was part of the team that wouldn't shake their hand when they walked off the court.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, so like, you know, it's funny how he was able to overcome all that. And that they respected him. But like, I saw a quote from Will Smith a couple of years ago about Michael Jordan, because he's like, Will Smith is one of like the very few people that Michael Jordan is really good friends with. And Will Smith was saying that, like, I think he was on one of the American chat shows, I probably saw it on YouTube at some stage, and they were saying, like, what's it like hanging out with Michael Jordan? And Will Smith was like, it's fucking tiring, man. Like, he was like, if we both get a bottle of water, like, the moment they open, Michael Jordan's like, I'll race you to the end. Like, you know, he's like, every single detail of his life is a competition. Like, every detail.
He must be fucking tired. Like, as he said, tiring to be around. Like, I don't know. That sounds sad.
Would you go? I'd go for a pint with him. I'd say he's
I would too.
Awesome stories to say. Like,
I'd love that. I'd say well able to drink, like. But I think
he's not far off Darren, that he loves talking about himself, so I'm sure he'd be great.
he'd be a great guest on the pod. Like, I'm just saying, MJ, if you're listening, like, you know, we'll have you on. Like, we'll definitely come on and chat you. We won't ask you about the Bulls. We won't ask you about the Wizards, definitely. But,
no.
It's a fascinating insight into the, like, what I loved about the documentary was the early footage of him when he first joined the Bulls, because that's something I really didn't know much about. I didn't realize exactly how shit they were, and I really didn't realize they were that bad. And he came up in an era where, like, you know, people are signed to long contracts. Like, that was half the issue with Scottie Pippen, was he was on this really long contract that wasn't paying his value by the end of it, and you couldn't really get out of him. So that's why I think as well some of the comparisons to modern day basketball players really falls down, because they're signing 1 and 2 year deals and can just be like, well, I'm one of the best players and I want to go to this team because it has the best players. And they can kind of pick and choose their teams. He fucking stayed it out for 7 years, and he was instant, 3 games in, he was a superstar in the NBA.
Yeah.
And he stayed it out with the Bulls for 7 years because, like, he fucking had that drive. But also, he's in an era where you couldn't just hop around teams. And I just think, like, I think the great thing about this documentary is it brings possibly the greatest sports person in the history of sport into an audience that a huge part of the world that wouldn't have had much exposure to him, just simply because the NBA wasn't like a worldwide sporting event in the mid-90s. Like, we didn't have access to it in Ireland. We saw highlights. It's not like we could jump on YouTube or anything, you know. We heard about it. We saw bits in newspapers, but it's just this phenomenal, this phenomenal guy who had some really, really fucking good talented players around him. But I think as well, you talked about like the likes of Reggie Miller and these guys. Like, Jordan dragged everyone with him. Like, he would not relent. It's a phenomenal documentary. Like, it's an unbelievable series.
Yeah, I think as well, like, what you're saying there in terms of like just how, like, outside of the backstories, just how it tells the story of basketball as well. So, like, you know, because you have like the behind the scenes commentary from the guys who were playing at the time, like, you have like the relevance of shots. So, like, there's that like 3-pointer by Steve Kerr against the Utah Jazz, isn't it?
The Jazz in 1997.
Yeah, and that, like, how that was in terms of like turning the game was like so critical that, like, and it, you know, you have people, their side of things where they're like, oh, you know, If we had gotten that tip ball and it had gotten, you know, it had come back to us, then we go down the other end of the court, we score 2 points, we go 5 points ahead. And, you know, that's our momentum. You know, we have the whole crowd behind us. That's our momentum. But instead, tip ball goes to Scottie Pippen, who feeds it to Steve Kerr, who is that three, who then, like, levels the game. And, like, they were like, as soon as that happened, we knew that the Bulls were, like, just... you know, it's those stories, whereas I think if you're watching a game of basketball, you don't actually, you don't realize that yourself how, you know, especially when you're not invested in teams as well. You know, you wouldn't have a basketball team per se, like, unless, you know, you're fully, but I just think it's phenomenal how it can tell, like, both those backstories and also just put, like, so much love into the game of basketball as well and those backgrounds.
Yeah, brilliant. Like, what I loved as well is that the, I think in terms of, like, capturing, I suppose, capturing the delivery of coverage at the time. And I suppose what it did really well was show the dramatic upscale of popularity of sports. And I suppose what, like, having a successful sports team did for Chicago as well. Because, like, there's this really brilliant thing, like, Neil's highlight from the entire series was when Stan Albeck, the coach before, two coaches before Phil Jackson, like Michael Jordan's coach for a second season, gets fired. And there's, like, this news reporter who's like, so basically the documentary tells that he gets fired. And then this news reporter is like, if you got up this morning and you're getting ready to go into work, your name isn't Stan Albeck because the coach's bull was fired last night. The Bulls coach was fired last night. You're like, fucking brilliant. Like, it's just, you know,
cold, like, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, then by the time Phil Jackson is leaving and they're getting rid of him, he's won 6 world championships, and it basically becomes the biggest media story in the world at the time.
Yeah,
or certainly it seemed it like, and it's sort like you have the guy who the general manager for every single world championship that the Bulls have put together being booed as he comes on the stage when they're parading the trophy. Yeah.
Jerry Krause,
yeah, surreal, like, you know. That was one thing that I thought, you know, if anything could have made this documentary better, a few things could have. If Jerry Krause is still alive, and they got him.
I wonder, was he interviewed and Jordan, because obviously we all know Jordan had the final signature on this documentary. He watched the whole series. He could have said, you know, I don't want this, and the other thing. I wonder, was Jerry Krause involved and Jordan?
They said he died a month beforehand, I think.
He died in 2017.
Yeah, I think a month before they went to do all the interviews, I think he died, yeah. So, but yeah, the director says that, like he's trying... Like, all the team hates Jerry Krause, as it comes across very apparently. But he said he tried to do it in documentary that, like, you know, this was actually the guy that brought this team together. Like, he made some bold moves, like, throughout the whole thing. And, like, yes, he slated for, like, breaking up the team at the end. But, like, he's actually, like, they're saying he's actually a genius and that he did a lot for the Bulls at the time. Like, and... he hoped show in the documentary that Jerry Krause wasn't the bad guy, he wasn't the villain in all of this. Like, there was just they're all just complex characters, they're all humans, like, you know.
Yeah, I think the Ku Coach episode kind of showed the value of him as a character. Because, you know, the episode where they show the Olympics and he's, like, absolutely shit in the first game against the US, and the lads are like, who the fuck is this fella coming over?
Yeah.
There's, like, the interviews after the game where Scottie Pippen is like, I don't think he'll play a game in the NBA. And he's signed for the Bulls, but he's waiting 2 years before he goes over. And what I thought...
Another great example of Jordan just creating a needless rivalry.
Yeah.
I love the bit where Kuko just is like, why was he so mean to me?
Yeah, it's brilliant. in the middle of the game, like, they were talking about this guy who was going to be the next big thing, and Jordan was like, well, I'm still fucking here, like.
Yeah.
And he just decides to pick on him for the game. Like, he's just like, I'm going to annihilate this guy and show him.
Yeah. Shooting over his head, everything like that. Crazy. Yeah. So good.
But I think then, you know, he came back in the second game. And I think that's brilliant, where, like, there's like bits of interviews with Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan afterwards where they're like, yeah, like after that second game where he came back, we knew that he was a bit of a player. And it was kind of them, they'd never out like praise Jerry Krause too much. I think Scottie Pippen was kind of like admitting that Jerry Krause did a good job, gritted teeth. I don't know, Jordan wasn't having any of it.
No.
But I think that episode really highlighted how valuable he was, because then after that, you're going to see Kukoc like do some really important things later on.
Like, obviously, in 94, I think it is. I think, do they give the shot to Tony Kukoc and Scotty sits out? Is that 94? Or is it just does Kukoc take that shot?
No, that's when Jordan is retired. That's when Jordan's
out. Yeah, no, Jordan's retired.
Jordan's playing basketball or baseball. So that's 91, 92, 93. It could be 94, 95, yeah.
But is Kukoc signed by then? And then they give him the shot.
Yeah,
Scotty sits out. Like, it's crazy to think that, like, Scotty is probably at that time top three NBA players, like, in the league, and they give the shot to Tony Kukoc. He's like, I don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah, he nails it. He's also like the 160th best paid player at the time. You know,
it's true. But he comes out in the documentary and says that at the time the deal he took was a deal that secured him financially for his whole family. It, you know, he had like 10 brothers and sisters. His father was in a wheelchair. His, like, they grew up in the small house. So at the time, like, it made sense for him to make this, like, whatever. I don't know what the figures were, but the 10-year deal or the 7-year deal he cut was the best thing for him, and it made sure that his family were fed. You know,
There was a brilliant part there where his brother comes on to do an interview, and his brother is literally like, you know, he literally built me this house. Like, you know, he's incredible. Like, and I think Scottie Pippen, like, even when I see him doing, like, he works on NBA coverage or some of the NBA update shows from time to time, and they get him on and they ask him about the Bulls, and, like, they've asked him to compare Jordan and LeBron before and stuff. And I just think he's this, like, I don't know, is it his voice? Even like,
I love his voice.
He's just mood,
one of the most lovable guys. Like, I think Dennis Rodman is the guy who you're going for a mad session on.
Yeah.
If you're talking about 2 or 3 pints sitting at a bar listening to someone talk, I'd be Scottie Pippen for me.
I was conscious of time there, lads. Darren, how are we doing?
We're about an hour and a couple of minutes.
Okay. I think that was a pretty good chat, though. Any final thoughts there on the documentary? Just like even favorite moment favorite moment and just a little summary or something.
I think favorite moment for me was the USA dream team that went to the Olympics, and Jordan is kind of talking about why Isaiah Thomas wasn't picked, and he was like, I don't know if it was because we didn't get on. He knows fully fucking well the reason Isaiah Thomas, one of the best basketball players of that, like, say, like, 88 to 92 period, was not picked, was because he did not get on with Jordan. And he knew full well, and he was just like, oh, I mean, I don't know, like, you know, obviously he just didn't fit the team or whatever he said. Yeah. I thought it was, he just shrugged the shoulders and handed the iPad back. I just thought it was fucking hilarious because he knows full well that it, like, he was the reason Isaiah Thomas doesn't have a gold medal.
Yeah. DJ, what about you?
It's very hard to pick a favourite moment when you've
got 10. I keep banging through them there.
You've got 10 amazing episodes, and I've probably listed a few of them there during the chat. But I think, you know, I think the thing is, when you see the human side of Jordan, is probably the best, because he's such a fucking robot and a cold, callous, calculated individual. So I'd say my favorite moment is possibly the bit where he it goes it talks about his dad and it talks about the picture of him and his dad when he wins the first world championship and the hug with the trophy. That's probably my favorite moment because Michael Jordan is an idol, and obviously there's the Air Jordan brand, and you see the like this globalization and this like massive personality, and everybody knows the competitive side of him, and it's been amplified by this documentary. But to see the human side of him, I thought was brilliant, even though those bits were few and far between. I definitely enjoyed that. And I also think the other human side of it, the one that I really, really liked was in his last season, there's a bit where he's just on his own in a hotel room, and they show like a series of, like they basically show his day. And it's like just him being mobbed by thousands of people.
And
there's a bit where he's just lying on the couch, smoking a cigar, and he's just he's just like, I'm fucking exhausted.
I don't care
what happens. Yeah. This is my last year.
Yeah.
And I just thought, like, fuck me. Do you know the way you'd love to be a superstar in the sport?
But
I watching that, I didn't want to be. I'm very fucking happy with my quiet life where we have a fucking small podcast. this is more than enough. Like,
I know.
So there are two standout moments for me, definitely.
Can I just add to Darren's one there regarding that the year his father died and he won that championship, and like he looks like happy and he's on the court, whatever. And then he comes inside and he's like in the physio room and he's literally on the floor like
crumpled
convulsions in tears, like it hurts him physically.
That made me very uncomfortable. That actually made me uncomfortable. I wish they didn't film that bit.
Because
I was a bit like, fuck, this isn't comfortable viewing. Like,
it's a tough watch. Like, it's tough to see someone that like is so, as you said, cold and callous. Like, he's a killer. Like, and then you see him so emotionally like vulnerable right there and then. I thought it's amazing. Like,
absolutely agree. And Owen, just before you give your favorite moment, I just want to give a shout out to any time Scottie Pippen spoke.
Just in general, yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Right, so since you guys have given two favourite moments, I'm going to give two favourite moments. I think one for me is that game where he has food poisoning the night before, and he goes out and he absolutely smashes it. And there's a bit where he comes out and he shoots like, I don't know, is it like 6 for 16 or something? He's like doing, he's shit in the first like say quarter or whatever.
It was the Jazz because they were playing up in Salt Lake City in Utah.
It was the Jazz. So he had a pizza or something the night before, and he comes in, and he's vomiting all night long, and goes out, he shoots shit for the first quarter. And then there's just a picture of him. So it's like every time they go for a timeout, like he's there and he's sweating buckets like on the bench. And there's just one bit where he has like the towel over his head and like Scotty has his hand on his back. You're right, man. And then like he's just towel over, you can't even see him. And they just go, whatever happened to him after that timeout? He just goes, yep, let's go. And he was fucking smashes it like for the rest of the game, shoots something like crazy, like 57 or something, like points for the rest of the game. Like, he's a beast, like, it's so good.
Yeah.
And then my other favorite moment is just where he's after like shooting Space Jam, and they have all those games, you know, where he brings in all the guys from the games and stuff. So I really like that, but it's like where it leads on from that, whereby the Bulls are back practicing, and he's like, oh man, sure, I'll just go over and I'll just try out, like I'll just, you know, shoot a game with you or whatever, and you know, like it. one game or one training session leads to like 1-on-1, which leads to a 2-on-2, which leads to a 3-on-3, and then they're all like he's playing full games at the end. And then it's just the way it's edited, where like it happens so quickly, and just like the article from or the front page of the Chicago Tribune just comes up on full screen, and it's just like, I'm back. And it's just like,
his agent is like,
send a memo.
I'm after writing 4 or 5 draft statements for him. Like, what are we going to say? What are we going to say? And he's like, man, shut up and give me the pencil. And he's like, just wrote one thing. And then it was like, I'm back.
Oh, fuck. Man, that's so good. The whole thing is amazing. Yeah. Best bullet documentary I ever watched. So great. Great chat, lads. Really enjoyed that. So I suppose just to wrap up, we'll do our usual few tidbits. Thanks a million to all our new patrons. We've had a few there in the last while. And just if you want to support the Snowcast, give us a price of a pint. You can't spend it in a pub, so you might as well spend it on us.
Yes.
So you can find us on patreon.com/Snowcast if you want to do it there. And we've been really behind on getting stuff for our members for the tiers and stuff. So we're looking at getting like bottle openers or something like that to send out to you guys, and just to say thanks for all the support.
We actually got a new patron in the last couple of days as well, Mark. So yeah. Shout out to Mark.
Great. Good. Oh, thanks, Mark.
We'll have a bottle opener or something to that coming all of your ways soon.
Soon, yeah. And again, if any of you guys want us to discuss anything on the podcast, you can leave us talk to us on any of the social media channels. We're more than happy to talk shite anyway. And you've been really great to us on social media as well, just giving your praise of the podcast, any improvements we can make, and just general chit chat, just getting us involved in what you think of how the world is going. And so, yeah, thanks a million for all that. DJ, would you like to say anything in regards to any charities or anything that people can get involved with?
Yeah, absolutely. The support for Water for Food Banks has been brilliant in the last few weeks. Like we've been pleading with people to support their local food banks lately. So I absolutely echo that sentiment. And also really loyal Snowcast listeners will know the Real Life Doctor. Simon's son Charlie is doing an Ironman. Charlie's 6 years old and he's doing an Ironman over the next
an
2 months.
He's doing an actual Ironman.
Yeah. So
like
he's
full length of an Ironman over the course of the summer.
So obviously Simon being the Real Life Doctor, he has a background in medicine and sports science. So he's doing it like supervised by an adult who's more than capable of looking after him. But Charlie is actually raising the funds for Barnados. And actually, it's Simon's birthday tomorrow, so happy birthday, Simon.
donate to his son.
Yeah, so donate to his son's charity. So you can look it up. I think it's Charlie's Iron. If you look like Charlie's Ironman on GoFundMe, we share the links and stuff. If you have a pound or two to share to that, that'd be brilliant as well. And also, just the fans mightn't realize all the podcasts are named typically after something that's said or done during the podcast. But I've come up with a name for this week's podcast. The Last Cans.
Oh. My God. Jesus Christ. That is top drawer.
It was just the two of us last week, so I called this last week's podcast Can Solo.
Yeah, that was good.
I was very happy with that. But The Last Cans, so thank you for listening to The Last Cans. It's really appreciated.
Good stuff. Ollie, do you want to say any parting word there for the guys?
I was going to say thanks for having me on. I'm missing you in real life.
IRL.
We'll head for a pint, whatever date the pubs are ever open. I'll see you, Billy Grimes, for one. Support Snowcast. They're not too bad.
actually, one last thing on before we go, listeners, fucking. Tweet us your pint watch. We want to hear what your pint watch thoughts are.
Yeah.
Get in contact.
Maybe we'll throw up a poll, will we? And see if we can get see how what if we can get like we'll do our 3 days and another.
Yeah, we'll do a poll and be like comment with your suggestion. Yeah, I think that'd be brilliant. I'd love to hear what you guys think about Pint Watch. Pint Watch as a segment has gotten some really good feedback. So get in contact, get in touch, and fucking listen. Let us know. What's your idea? What's your thoughts? When will the pubs be open? Do you think? Do you agree? Disagree? Fucking get a bit of discourse going. Let's start chatting about when the pubs will reopen. Let's get fucking let's get the positive energy around the pubs back going again, because we were dismal for a while. The last 3 months have been like pubs are going to be fucking never open again. So let's get a bit of positive discourse about a good positive pub experience going again. So talk to us about pubs. We love pubs.
Good stuff. Thanks a million, guys. So this has been the Snowcast. This has been the Last Cans. Thanks a million. Don't wreck our Pint Watch. Stay away from yourselves out in the community. Fucking don't be apt in the market.
Actually, stay away from yourselves has never been more apt.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Take care. Good luck. Bye bye.
Sláinte, sláinte.
When we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweater starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.